I basically wrote a very large book that got divided into two books by my publisher about Epstein and the intelligence connections. And so basically what I argue about is that there's this transnational group that Epstein was part of, but he wasn't the head of it. He's like middle management in it at best. And that these people exert influences over many governments, and they are not really overseen by any national government, nor really loyal to any of them. And that they're, basically the one of the, you know, de facto ways, our world is actually governed, as opposed to the public governments, that we all know, which are, have basically been reduced to enabling environments for the policies made by these other people that are then filtered down through think tanks or philanthropic foundations. Think the Gates Foundation, for example. And so, like, if you look at Epstein, in a, you know, as a microcosm of this, like, he was setting up a lot of these philanthropic foundations that influence policy. He was doing a lot of shady financial stuff, helping powerful people hide their taxes so they don't have to pay it. He was money laundering. And so a lot of these things don't get prosecuted when they're done by very powerful people in the United States. And it's interesting, too, that one of the funds that Epstein was involved setting up was actually handling money for our current Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent. And he refuses to release Epstein's Treasury records, even though Congressman Ron Wyden asked that they do so. And he introduced the Released Epstein Treasury Records Act to Congress. Haven't heard very much about that lately, but I really hope it passes because people deserve to see what was going on there. But I have a feeling it won't. These oligarchs that people like Epstein front for are not accustomed to ever being held accountable for anything. So Wexner is a good example of that, but I don't think it's exclusive to him. And so a key actor in this network testified to Congress in the early 70s about what was going on with this group. And I think he really gave it away, but like, just they didn't care. It's really brazen, frankly. It's Samuel Pisar, who was a lawyer. He's best known now as Anthony Blinken's stepfather, but he was Robert Maxwell's lawyer and very close friend, and involved with basically what he said was building up commerce relations between the Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc during the Cold War. And basically what he argued in the early 70s to Congress is that what was happening was the creation of a trans-ideological corporation that was becoming the de facto power in the world, making the nation state irrelevant. So what he meant by trans-ideological corporation is that it was capitalist Western multinational corporations entering into joint venture with communist state-owned corporations, and that these forces were essentially joining hands and creating a structure of governance that was really running the world, of economic governance. So you see it back then in the early 70s being told to Congress, we're making a sovereign corporation, a SovCorp, that runs everything. And it doesn't matter what national governments do. National governments bow to us. And so I would argue that that's what Epstein was really working for. And I think if you look at intelligence agencies, let's take the CIA, for example, they serve those same masters. The CIA is not the top of the food chain. So, for example, if you look at the early coups of the CIA, who were they for? Well, in Iran in 1954, it was for Anglo-American Oil. In Guatemala, it was for United Fruit Company. You know, the list goes on and on of all the U.S. corporations or multinational corporations that led our intelligence services to, you know, finance and foment, you know, coup d'etats in foreign countries.
The CIA is basically economic hitmen. Would that be?
Well, I think they have many purposes beyond that, but that's absolutely one of them. And they also do regime change operations.
Yes.
And a litany of other bad things. So,
but the regime chains are almost always at the
behest of corporations. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because what we're really talking about are the oligarchs. They're the ones really in charge. And, you know, intelligence agencies work for them.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with minbenazidil, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenazidil is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenazidil studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined in studio now by the one and only Brandon Straka. And you know what? I came down here. I don't even have anything about you, how people find you and everything. Of course, people know you from the Walk Away movement. We just had a fantastic time in Dallas doing debates.
Yeah.
I did a debate. Alex did a debate. 3-on-3, or 4-on-4, I guess, for ours. So excited for these to come out. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. And I've been banned on everything anyway, so I don't have any socials anyway, so don't worry about it.
No, you do. You're on X, right?
No, I do. Yeah. No. After J6, Walkaway got banned from Facebook, but actually after more than 5 years of intense litigation, I think I'll have some very exciting news about the Walkaway campaign very soon.
That's very exciting.
Not necessarily today, but very soon. And yeah, I'm on everything. I did just launch a podcast, so I hope people will take a look at that on YouTube and Rumble at the Brandon Strock channel on YouTube and Rumble.
Well, I've been every time we've done a debate, very impressed by your organizational capabilities. I mean, the studios always look amazing. And what I thought was really special about what happened over the weekend was it was this event that brought people together. You know, I would say it's like Twitter come to life. It's all these, you know, great people that we interact with online, sometimes not in a very friendly way, but just getting together and getting to hang out and see each other in person. And we did the debate and it got a little contentious, but at the end of the day, we're cracking each other up on the Uber ride home. And it's just a really unique circumstance because any other time that I've been in a situation like that, it's usually at CPAC or a TPUSA event and there's crowds and there's all this. But here it was just, since there was no audience for the debates, it's just sort of the content creators, the influencers, whatever you want to call them. We just got to sit around and sort of chew the fat for a while. And it's a very unique opportunity that really, I think, genuinely fosters some unity on the right in a way that we're really lacking.
So interesting you should say that, because as the weekend was wrapping, and just so your audience understands, basically Walkaway flew out about 30 influencers, to shoot over the course of 36 hours, what ended up being 5 different debates. It was supposed to be 4. But we ended up doing kind of an impromptu, I don't want to call it a debate. I want to call it a roundtable discussion about Charlie Kirk's murder.
Right.
And the closest it came to debate was, I think, that we talked about the way in which the conversation about Charlie Kirk's murder is being handled by certain different. So I just want people to understand, we weren't sitting around saying like, well, what really happened to Charlie? It wasn't like that. It was more like, how is this productive,
mm-hmm.
the way that the different sides are presenting their theories about what happened to Charlie. And anyway, when the weekend wrapped, I said to my team, you know, if I had realized the way that this was going to feel and how this all went down, I would have made it into a conference and actually invited people to come and attend, and you know, and made it actually a little bit bigger. And I think we should do that in the future.
Yeah, no, I think we should. And so what is the secret to getting all these people to the same place? Because, you know, as much as I really try, genuinely try not to, you know, contribute to the division on the right, but it's hard not to. And, you know, things get heated, especially on Twitter, where you always read things in the most unfriendly way.
Yeah.
So how do you bring all these people together? How do you in particular do it?
Well, so one little advantage is that typically the right is a little bit better than the left at showing up to defend their position. Now, I will say I've been a little tiny bit disappointed in some of the MAGA influencers who talk mad. Can I swear on your show?
No, okay, we're on the radio.
Who talk mad crap?
Trash. Yes.
Yeah. On X. And then I, you know, we're saying, well, just show up and say the same thing you're saying on X, but just say it to the person's face across from you. And a lot of them don't want to. But as you saw, a lot of them did,
yeah.
You know, we had at least what, 16 or so people show up to represent the MAGA side. So number one, there's a little bit more of a willing spirit to show up and defend their position. But number two, it's very difficult, actually, to kind of jigger everybody's schedules. Like, that's actually the hardest part. This right. one can come on this day, but this one can't come on this day, and, you know, blah, 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 blah.
But there's still a willingness to go.
There's a willingness to go, and I would also say, and I'm going to pat my team on the back right now when I say that, and maybe even myself a little bit. Walkaway goes out of our way to treat people with a lot of kindness and respect and dignity and stuff. So, and we even do that with the left. Like when we've done events where the left shows up to debate, no one gets a cold shoulder. No one gets, you know, we put people up at a nice location. We try to provide transportation. Everyone gets treated with a white glove treat, you know, because it's like, even if it was somebody who I was just completely ideologically opposed to, I want everyone who participates in anything we do to leave saying I had a great experience with Walkaway. And I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah. And like I said, it is a great experience. And obviously you put a lot of work into it and a lot of hard work. When can people expect to see these debates come out? What's the timeline?
Okay. So like I said, we ended up doing five. It was supposed to be four, but the Charlie Kirk thing was a little bit impromptu. So we're trying to actually prioritize. We would like to get that out within a week. So I think there's a strong likelihood that the Charlie Kirk roundtable, people will be seeing that within 7 days and hopefully closer to five. The next one that's going to come out is going to be MAGA versus America First. And we did two of those. So one of the ones that we did was with this guy. I don't know. His name's Alex Jones. I don't know if you've heard of him.
He's a gay frogs guy.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But yeah,
he's not a gay frog himself.
Right. Right. But he does. Yeah,
that's right. But he talks a lot about gay frogs.
I've heard a thing or two.
Yeah. And he's made some predictions about gay frogs, I think.
Yes.
He was involved. So, it was MAGA versus America First. And on the America First side, we had Alex Jones, Joe Kent, Joel Webbin, and Kai Schwimmer, who was incredible. Did you know Kai Schwimmer?
Oh, yeah, of course. He's great.
Well, see, I didn't know him that well, and I was blown away, super impressed by how talented he is. And in fact, I called him the next day, and I said, I want to work with you a lot more. You're awesome.
Yeah, he's very awesome. And then on the other side, it was heavy hitters also, Andrew Wilson, Doyle, Will Chamberlain.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're doing this because we did so many. I was panicking. I was like, oh my God, am I going to remember who was on the other side?
I know. Well, I feel bad. I was doing that same thing when we first got back. I was like, I'm going to, you know, say, oh, it was a great meeting this person. I went, I cannot remember all of them, so I better just not say any of them or someone's going to be mad I leave them out. But everybody there was great.
So you named everyone except for one. Andrew Wilson, John Doyle, Gerald Wilson,
right.
And who was the other one that I think you just said? It doesn't matter. It does matter.
Will Chamberlain, John Doyle, Andrew
Will Chamberlain. Yeah. Will Chamberlain. That's it. So that was the first one. I really enjoyed doing yours. You actually did two, so we also did another MAGA versus America First. And amazing people on that one as well. Chase Geyser, you, Viva Fry,
Alex Stein,
some really great people on the other side, David Pollack, Tommy Sotomayor,
Noer, right?
Noer, yeah, that's it. And Mikhail.
That's right.
I'm going to blank on his last name right now. But one thing that I thought was really cool is you actually participated in two. Mm-hmm. The other one that we did was a conspiracy theories debate. I'm smiling because you were just saying a second ago about there being almost like a little bit of a fraternal feel, you know, to the couple of days that we shot. That's what was so nice, I thought, about the conspiracies debate, because we actually, you know, doubled up on some of the people from MAGA versus America First, including having, you know, opposition. But basically, the conspiracies debate was almost like a game show style.
Yeah.
Kind of like round circle.
A little more lighthearted.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was funny. I was I thought my jokes were funny. I don't know if my jokes were funny, but you know, we did it kind of like a Halloween themed, like very tongue in cheek. And that one will be coming out closer to Halloween, probably in October. But Alex's will come out first, and that's going to be probably by August 31st. And then we'll do the next two in September, and then conspiracy theories in time for Halloween.
Well, I'm very excited to see all of them. It was very fun participating in all of them. I agree. I thought our debate about America First versus MAGA was very substantive and very...
Very.
Everybody's arguing in good faith, which I think is the big difference, because that's what you see with the left, is they're just not arguing in good faith. They're either saying things they don't believe, or they're just being snide and trying to win points. And maybe there are some leftists out there that can argue in good faith, but you don't see it very much. And with our opponents, even if we disagreed with them, we actually agreed on a lot of stuff. You could just tell that they were genuinely trying to convince us of their genuine position, which was nice. Just final question about this, because I didn't want to get on to really want to ask you about some other debates coming up that should be pretty exciting. But what did anything surprise you? Did anything really stand out as something totally unexpected that somebody said, or a position somebody took, or the vibe was unexpected in any way?
Well, I'm going to say a positive thing and a negative thing. I'll start with the negative so I can end on a positive. Okay, so one thing I noticed between this round of debates and the ones, because you were a part of the first round, which, did we shoot those in May or June?
Boomers versus millennials. Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah, I think we shot that maybe in May. Or wait, March? It was during CPAC.
Earlier this year.
Oh, my
yeah.
God. Yeah, I think we shot that in March. That's unbelievable. Yeah, because it was during CPAC Dallas. So one thing that I've noticed has changed, in my opinion, is that the side representing MAGA, part of their messaging to me has gotten a little more desperate. Mm. Because now I'm hearing a lot more of like, you know, the midterms are just around the corner, and, you know, we got to get out and we got to vote for Republicans because Republicans are better than Democrats. They're better than Democrats. Do you want that? Like, before, there was a little bit more of like swagger behind their message.
Don't
just
be panicking,
like, you guys are panicking. Yeah, you guys are doomers. You guys are whatever. And now it's like, oh my God, oh my God. You still got to come out and vote, and you got to vote for Republicans because they're better than Democrats. And I'm like, this, you guys are panicking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I saw that.
And I think I made that point during the debate is, you know, before it was all, well, be patient. Things are happening. It's behind the scenes. Don't be so rough. Don't be a panicking. We got plenty of time. And now, you know, they didn't listen to us then. And now it's, well, it's too late. We don't have time. We don't have time to do this. We got to do the midterms. You got to focus on this right now. A little bit frustrating. Okay. So that's the negative. But I agree. I see a certain element of franticness, you know, seeping into the GOP's messaging.
Yeah.
What was the positive thing?
The positive thing was that particularly in your America versus America First, of all the debates that we've done going back to March when we did the first series, I felt more during that debate than I ever have this feeling that we are in fact on the same side.
Mm.
The first debates that we did, including the ones that we did in Orlando, that you weren't in that one, but it was a different group, and that got really nasty. There was even a couple of girls, and there was almost like a fist fight at one point. And it felt like we were so divided at that point that we might as well be right versus left.
Right.
Like, it felt that divided. This time, it felt more like we're a family having a significant falling out, but that we actually do want to be together again.
Yeah.
I think we do actually want to come back together.
We certainly both want the same goals, which I noticed that too, that it's like, no, I want to defeat the Democrats. No, I want to defeat the Democrats.
Right.
It's like, wait, we're on the same side.
We are.
We all get each other. But it's about difference of tactic, difference of sort of where this ultimately goes, right? Where this movement goes, what, you know, we're actually trying to achieve, whether we have time to wait or not. I mean, it's really more about tactics and strategy than ultimate end goal, which we do actually agree on.
That's right. Yeah. And so, and that's the thing too, is I want, it's so weird. There are so many people on the right who their mentality seems to be, wait, you're second guessing Trump. You're questioning Trump. So you're a Democrat now.
Right.
That's literally like, that's where it goes. And it's like, no, I like, there are many ways to be a Republican, or there's many ways to express, you know, my conservative values. Like, you can be a conservative and not be behind Trump. You know, I mean, anyone can do that. So I think it's important for people to remember, like, you know, and it's not about like, we all want Trump to succeed. Like, we all, like, we want to be behind him, but he's changed.
Yeah. Well,
and
this, of course, goes back to your entry into politics with the walkaway movement and what you sort of realized about the Democratic Party and how they were not free thinkers and they did not accept, you know, people with different alternative visions. Like, we are the side that allows for this type of dissension, that allows for questioning things.
Well, we used to.
I know, and this is part of the, it must be weird for you sort of seeing the Republican side now saying stop asking questions, you know, fold into line.
Weird is a very nice word. I mean, honestly, it's at times been devastating. I mean, truly devastating, because when I left the left, and I need people to understand the cost that comes with it. I mean, I lost like 90% of my friends, lost my entire life that I used to know. I lost family members. And I walked into uncertainty when I left the left. Now, thankfully, I was only in that place of uncertainty for a very brief period of time. I put out, you know, this video in 2018 talking about all the reasons I was walking away. And I wanted this idea for this movement to be successful, for Walkaway to be successful. But I didn't know for sure. You never know for sure if something's going to hit on social media. Turns out it did, thank God. And I ended up with this like groundswell of support from this movement of people who said, you know, welcome home. You've found the place where you can, we can agree to disagree. We can be civil, the civil discourse. We're not a cult. You know, we can have a broad spectrum of ideas. We can disagree without being disagreeable, all these different things. And I was like, this is what I wanted. This is amazing. And somehow now this side that I'm on, it's like a mind virus or something has over, like it has become exactly like the left that I walked away from. Exactly. Not a little bit, exactly like the left that I walked away from.
Yeah. And it's untenable. I mean, you cannot arrive at the right, you know, position if you aren't having open dialogue and conversation about it. So it's been very disheartening to see the way this has gone, especially with the war in Iran and everything. But the debates were fantastic, and I genuinely cannot wait for them to come out. They're going to come out on all of Walkaway's social medias and everything, right? So what do people follow so they see it as soon as it comes out?
Sure. So if you're like a Rumble person, and that's I would encourage you to follow the Walkaway campaign Rumble account. Also follow, please, my Rumble account, Brandon Strzok, so you can see I've launched a new show recently and putting episodes out once a week on Mondays. We're not very big on Rumble. We haven't pushed it that hard, but we do pretty well on YouTube. So YouTube Walkaway campaign, I think we have 270,000 subs or something. Not too bad. And also the Brandon Strzok channel on YouTube, where people can see episodes of my new show. But so we'll be putting out the entirety of them on YouTube and Rumble. And then, of course, people will see lots of clips and stuff on X. And honestly,
oh, there's going to be a lot of highlights. I can tell you that right now.
And maybe we'll even rethink our distribution strategy, honestly. I mean, there's a chance maybe we'll release the whole thing on X as well.
Yeah.
Possibly. They'll definitely see clips.
I think that's a great idea. So the like biggest news on X today is the anticipation about the Andrew Wilson-Candace debate. Mm. To be perfectly honest, I do not give a damn about this debate. I think this is so pointless. I don't know if you saw the Stu Peters, Andrew Wilson debate about the same topic. Literally the whole thing is, you make a claim. No, you make a claim. I won't make a claim. You make a claim. And it's just, this whole thing has become a circus to me. I think the whole thing's ridiculous. What's your prediction? What are your thoughts on the upcoming, you know, storied Andrew Wilson versus Candace Owens? Will this finally solve things once and for all? I'm sure.
No, no. And also, you know, I'm not really much of a conspiracy guy. I hosted the conspiracy debate for fun, but like, I actually don't really buy into many conspiracy theories at all. But do you want to hear the craziest conspiracy theory?
Yeah, let me have it.
Possibly. I am sometimes questioning if Erica Kirk and Candace Owens are calling each other every night and laughing. But oh, you've thought of this too?
I've thought of the same thing.
You have?
Well, because there are some things that happen, you just go, what? I mean, I don't even want to get into it, but there are some things Erica Kirk does that I'm just like, are you trying to give them fodder? Are you trying to give them something to harp on for the next 2 years? Because what are you doing? Yes, I've thought this exact same thing.
Well, I'm only presenting it for different reasons, actually.
Okay.
And by the way, I'm saying this tongue in cheek, right? Like there's like 2% of me. Yeah, I'm just throwing something out there because we're having a conversation.
This is what's all about.
But, you know, I think to myself, every time Candace attacks Turning Point, I have to imagine they're raising a boatload of money, like, because people feel sorry for them, and especially they feel sorry for Erica. So they're going to, when they, people feel sorry for people, they send them money. Candace has always benefited from Turning Point raking in a ton of money. Now, I'm going to try to keep myself in check here, but like, for those of us who have been in this movement for a long time and know the chatter behind the scenes and like what's really going on, people knew very well that Charlie and Candace had had a falling out. Like, that was well established. I mean, despite what she's trying to present now, like, they were not close friends at the end. That's just not true. And, but yet she can, you know, people are like, well, how could that be? She was speaking at Turning Point events up until the end. Well, I think it's, she was a cash cow for them. Like, sure. You know, she pretty black woman who says, oh, you know, black people are on a plantation and, you know, white Christians love to, oh my God, let's throw money at the black
woman. She's good at what she does. I mean, yes. You can't take that away from her.
Yes. And so when she started participating in their stuff, like, their profile raised tremendously, and they raised a ton of money off of her. And my belief, I don't know that I can prove it, is that when a personal falling out started to happen between her and Charlie, I think their relationship became transactional. And I think it became like, okay, you'll keep speaking at Turning Point events, we'll pay you a ton of money, and in exchange, we'll raise a ton of money because you're still participating in Turning Point. And it was just an arrangement that I think worked out well for them. As this thing goes on and on and on, I'm like, did that arrangement ever really evaporate? Because the more she attacks them, the more money they're raising. And then, it's, okay, is it true that she's being paid $300,000 by Andrew Wilson to do this?
That's what we hear, yeah.
Okay, so I have to imagine that money is being sent through Turning Point. I have to imagine Turning Point gave the money to Andrew. Andrew gave it to Candace. If she doesn't show up, the money goes back to Turning Point. And if she does show up, it goes to her. So she's still making money from Turning Point.
Well, I don't know exactly how that worked, because it was, I think it was the guy from Whatever Podcast offered $150,000 and then Andrew offered to double it, but now he's crowdfunding for it. So I don't know exactly how that's going to work, but it all has the air of a WWE conflict. I think that's what that's what you sort of get, and because that's what I get too. And it's just like,
I'm just saying nothing is what it seems, and everything is theater, and like, it's everything's fake.
Everybody's got ulterior motives and is trying to make more out of something than maybe it deserves, or is trying to downplay something that should be focused on. It's just, it's all very bizarre, and I think just a complete distraction at that point, which is why I say I really am not, I'm not even looking forward to this Andrew, you know, Candace debate, and I think it's like sucking all the air out of the room now. There are more important things to be concerned about right now, in my opinion.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah.
Sorry, and I don't mean
to cut
you off. I just, like, the problem, you're right. You're 100% right with what you just said. But the problem is the distraction is not Candace. And the distraction is not Turning Point. And the distraction is not Andrew. People can't be distracted unless they want to be distracted.
Right.
And so I'm making this point because, you know, even if you took my, I think Walkway has been doing amazing work for 8.5 years. I mean, we've gone out there, we've done voter registration drives, we've done college tours, we've done whatever. Anytime we do these things that are actually meaningful to changing the culture and stuff, people are like, they're not interested. They don't want to get involved. They don't whatever. But then Candace Owens does some lunatic thing on social media and 500 million people are like, oh God, I can't wait to, I'm going to take the day off of work so I don't have to. And I'm like, so you're distracted because you want to be distracted. Don't blame Candace Owens. This is you.
No, absolutely. And hell, I fall for it too. I'll be scrolling, and if I see a video that's somebody attacking somebody else, I'm like, I got to see the attack. I want to see the drama. I mean, there's something human about that. You want to see the drama.
Me. Do not question Israel. There you go.
It scared the crap out of me, and I saw it coming.
The man can move silently. You don't know. You don't
I literally
know
watched it happen, and I was still scared.
I saw nothing in your eyes that gave it away. Holy goodness. I just completely reset my brain. What are we talking about? Something about Candace Owens?
Yeah. Well, basically.
Here. All right. Alex has given us props now. We'll be back in just a minute. We got to go to commercial break. Folks, go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. We'll be right back, more with Brandon Straka. We're going to talk more about Candace and Andrew debate coming up.
What's most wrong?
And what the future of the Republican Party is moving forward. How we cling on to the little victories we've had and expand them even further. If we can get through the debate, if we can get through the conversation, that is. We'll be right back.
Do you want to try some?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. We'll send you some methylene blue. And if you guys want to get it too, you can get it from thealexjonesstore.com. I invented two proprietary products. Gavin, I'm a business owner, supplement formulator, Power Plant and Methyl Drive. You guys got to get them right now. Magnesium, CoQ10, PQQ, Rhodiola Rosea, Golden Root. It's got the cordyceps, the zinc, the selenium. It's got the boron as well. Raise your free testosterone. Raise your ability to get through hard days and hard tasks. And ultimately raise the potential of the methylene blue that you're probably already taking if you're watching this network. We have that available for you. It's a really good deal, really good price. people just kind of across the internet have told me they've started taking it and they've been able to get to the gym again. They've been able to get through hard days at work again. Specifically, that Power Plant formula. If you're looking for something like Super Male Vitality from back in the day, I basically invented a better version of that. That's called Power Plant. It's available solo or also in the Power Drive bundle at thealexjonesstore.com. Look up what proper magnesium does for your body. Look up what proper methylated vitamin B12 does for your body. All of that and more is in Power Plant and Methyl Drive, and you can get them all three together on the Power Drive bundle, along with the other phenomenal products. We have the turmeric. We've got the MK Ultra, which is a phenomenal multivitamin, also nootropic as well. Ultimate Burn. If you really, you're trying to lose a little bit of weight, here's the thing. I've been doing a good job. I'm almost down to like 205 now. If you want to join me on a weight loss journey, you can get yourself some Ultimate Burn. And all the other products we have, like Methylene Red specifically, are also great for that. Methylene Red also has that CoQ10. Get the turmeric, get the blue, get the gummies, get the colostrum. My grandma is not capping on jaw for real. It really helped her with her hair if you want it. We've got the T3 trifecta iodine, the absolute staple of the old network. We've got the Ultimate Sea Moss, Ultimate Turmeric, the Bovine Beef Tallow. It's got the Methylene Blue inside the tallow. Incredible antioxidant, Methylene Blue. I already went over it, tried to with Gavin a little bit. We've got the Zeolite, incredible for heavy metal support, dechelation, stuff like that. The Shilajit Complex, we've even got smelling salts. Ultimate Life Force, which is absolutely incredible. It's got the natokinase in there. It's got things theoretically to, you know, attenuate certain anecdotal things with the spike protein. Not making a health claim there. Talk to your doctor. It's just a top-rated formula for a reason. The Ultimate CMOS gummies in another form. The creatine, the Ultimate Power. We've got tons of sales on the different forms and flavors of the Ultimate Power pre-workout. We've got the NAD. We've got the Methyl Drive. We've got the MK Ultra. We've got Optimal Human. I got drink mixes for you. I got powders. I got energy gum. This is what you need. We have an electrolyte powder. It is so important in the summer months to get proper electrolyte support. And if you look at a lot of these blends on the grocery store shelf, they are pure garbage. Get yourself some Optimal Human. Get yourself some beef tallow. Get yourself some Atomic Defense. All of that and more is available at thealexjonesstore.com. I did not even mention the water filtration, the shower filtration that we have, the Patriot apparel that we have, the collectible coins, memorabilia that we have. Literally everything that you could ever want theoretically or practically to support this operation, you can get at thealexjonesstore.com. This is what makes us different. Other people do a show so they can sell a product. We sell the best products in the world so that we can do the best show in the world. That's what makes this operation completely different, completely viewer, listener, supported, funded, owned by you at home when you decide, when you choose to make the decision to support us and get the phenomenal products at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm telling you again, the Power Drive Bundle, Methyl Drive, Power Plant, Methylene Blue, that is like the trifecta.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Gentlemen, this is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on AlexJonesLive.com. I'm here with Brandon Straka of the Walk and Away Movement. You can follow him on X at Brandon Straka. And I want to talk about, well, let's finish off what we were just saying about the Andrew Wilson, Candace Owens debate. Because I, you know, I don't want to be poo-pooing on something everybody is so excited about. But I do, I mean, so do you see this as a, I guess this is the question. Do you, when you asked me to do the America First MAGA debate, I've at first said no, because I just didn't want to contribute to the divide. I see the divide. I recognize it. I want to try to heal it. And I said, look, I just don't know if I don't want to be yelling at MAGA people, F Trump. Like, I'm not about that. I don't want to do that. Yeah. So how do you heal the divide without addressing it? How do you address it without making it wider? I mean, does it even matter? Should we just plow forward? What do we do about this?
Are you asking me about the debate?
I'm asking you to solve all of our problems right now in one.
And I can do that. That's who. That's who I am, and that's okay, what I good. Do. No, the only thing I need clarity on are we the divide or the Charlie debate or both?
Well, I see them as indicative. I see sort of the Charlies become this sort of bellwether or dividing line between the sides. I see what's happening with Andrew Wilson and Candace Owens as being them being sort of icons of. Of these two camps.
So here's my take on this. I totally understand why any normal person would think that the Charlie debate is demonstrative of the divide or as you say, indicative of the divide. In a way, I kind of feel like it's not because I think that it's fringe people on both extreme. Like, I think reasonable people are saying, let's let it play out and like, let's see what happens in the courtroom and let's see what happens with the evidence and things like that. Unfortunately, I think what has happened here is that the Charlie, I don't even think it's about Charlie anymore. And I don't even think it's about what happened to him or his murder. I think it's really a debate. I'm going to have so many crazy people stalking and harassing me now after I say this, but I think it's what it's really become is sort of this like fringe people debate about trust in our institutions versus trust in official narratives. And I think Charlie is just sort of the vessel that this debate is happening in. And so, and this is somebody who has no faith in our institutions and has no, I don't trust the FBI. I don't trust the CIA. I don't trust law enforcement. I don't trust, to a degree. So I'm not some person who's just like, oh, well, if the FBI tells us that's what happened, that's what happened. I don't think that. They're real people here. I mean, this guy, he had children and he had a wife and he has parents and people who loved him. And somebody killed him. And there's a substantial chance that that person could get away with it if people don't calm down. Like, that is a risk factor. And I just think I am a believer that the public has a right to know and the public has a right to ask questions, but like, calm down,
right?
Calm down.
I know. And that's I'm exactly the same way. And there is room for nuance in all of this, but it seems like both sides want to extricate the nuance. And in the exact same way that they say, well, if you don't believe the official story 100%, then you're with the Candace Owens and you believe Egyptian planes and exploding microphones. And the other side is kind of saying the same thing, but in an inverted way of, if you aren't, believing us and coming along with us in a full-fledged way, then you're a Fed slopper and you're being paid to do. It's like there's a middle ground here, folks. And there's the fact that, when you study this stuff enough, there are some things where you just go, we're never going to know. I can put all the supposition forward I want. I may be correct, but I accept that if I'm correct, like one of the things I think I asked during the Charlie Kirk, roundtable thing was, if it was Israel, would you expect that ever to be evidenced, ever to have evidence of that, ever for the media to talk about it? And the answer is no. So if you think it's Israel that did it, you might just want to accept that you're just going to have to believe that on faith and you're never going to be provided evidence for that.
Well, yeah, and also, I would say, and this is how I know it's not really about him, even though he's kind of like the proxy in this argument, but it's like, you should be able to feel whatever you feel and have whatever opinion you have and be able to talk with somebody who feels the opposite without losing your mind.
True.
And if you can't do it without losing your mind, then it's not really about him, because that doesn't even make sense. I've pretty much stayed out of it. Like, I haven't even really, I apparently espoused an incredibly controversial opinion when I spoke to Marjorie Taylor Greene, which what I said to her was, I think we should wait and see what evidence presents itself. And after we see all the evidence, I said, I think it's possible that some people right now who are out there really making bold statements may end up finding themselves discredited.
Yeah.
Because I said that, I had a number of people block me and unfollow me. And before they did, they were just like, I used to love you. I used to believe in you, but it's obvious now that you're bought and paid for and you're stupid. You're an idiot. And I'm like, you can't possibly feel this strongly about, like, right. This is about something else. This isn't about what you're saying it's about. This is something else is going on in your head, and Charlie has just become the vessel.
Yeah, the avatar for whatever
you're, going crazy about.
Yeah, totally. And so I guess what the similarity, the commonality between sort of the Charlie stuff and the MAGA divide is Israel. I mean, it goes back to that a lot. That's another thing that you cannot talk about without stepping on one mine or another, one yep. team's red line or the other.
Yep.
Becomes extremely difficult. And it seems like if nothing else, you know, is what Candace doing, like, this is a genuine question, is it helping us to have better conversations, or is it making it harder to have these difficult conversations? I genuinely don't know. On one hand, I want to be like, hey, you got to support people who, even if you don't agree with them, I am free speech. I want them to be able to say it. On the other hand, it's like, if the conversation is dominated by the most fringe elements, how valuable is it really? I mean, is it, where do you draw the line of like, I'm a free speech champion, but you know, maybe some self-control is in order.
Oh, first of all, before I answer this, I just want to reiterate, you're going to find my body floating in the river tomorrow. Yeah, because, like, I'm telling you, people are so invested in this, and they're so off the rails. Okay, so here it is. And this, what I'm about to say doesn't even have to do with Charlie or his, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with Candace and who and what. I don't think it's Candace's intention to foster productive conversations. I don't think she's doing this for the reasons that she says she's doing it for. Again, I want to I can't say this enough. This has nothing to do with my opinion of what I think did or did not happen to Charlie Kirk. It has entirely to do with what I think are the motivations of Candace Owens as the person I have known her to be for over 8 years. I think she's a person with a lot of negative intentions who is extraordinarily good at doing things and making them seem like she's doing things for reasons other than what she's actually doing them for. Did that make sense? Even if, whether you agree or not?
It did, but it sounds like maybe you're dancing around what you're actually trying to say. I mean, do you think that Candace Owens, what do you think she's doing it for? I mean, is it just the money and attention? Is it just because she's being incentivized by the reaction she's getting?
I think I have my experiences with her starting going back 8 years ago, shortly after I came out of the gate with Walk Away, are that she's an extraordinarily vengeful person and a person who feels very entitled. She's a very entitled person to have what she wants or what she thinks she deserves. And if she does not get that, she will destroy. She's a destructive person. And this shouldn't be controversial to anyone. Look at the breadth of her career and look at how she was with Tommy Lahren, with Ben Shapiro, but like literally every person that she's worked with to get to where she is today, she has had a destructive and negative falling out with, and a number of other people along the way. And I've had that with her on a personal level as well. And what I think she is, I've never seen anything like it. I don't deny for her that she's incredibly bright. And she certainly presents very, very well and has kind of like a unique way of magnetic, I suppose. People kind of gravitate towards. The problem is that there is something pathological about her. And so she's, you know, normally a woman scorned or a vengeful woman would be maybe a little bit more naked in her intentions, you know, like I'm going to get even with my ex-boyfriend, you know, that kind of thing. I think Candace is extraordinarily good at making people not see why she's doing what she's doing and what it's really about. So while everyone thinks this is about justice for Charlie, I think she has a different intention for all of this. And I think a lot of it has to do with getting even with Turning Point, getting even with people within the organization that maybe, you know, Charlie was her connection to the organization as long as, you know, he was around, and now he's not around. And so I think what's motivating her now is, you know, he's not around anymore. There's nothing in it for me. And a lot of these people, you know, maybe didn't have my back, or I deserve this, or I should have had that, or I should have whatever. And so,
yeah. And I, as much as I, you know, would disagree with Charlie and disagree with the way TPOSA was being used, especially when it comes to Israel. That was sort of my main beef with them. But I still have always so much appreciated what TPOSA did, the power that it had. I mean, hell, look at the event where Charlie lost his life. To have however many thousands of kids packed in on a sunny afternoon listening to this. I mean, that is a cultural phenomenon that I've never seen in my life. And I always, you know, point out my little cousin going to UT in 2016 and having the TPUSA sticker on his water bottle and just thinking, okay, they've made conservatism cool. To some degree, they've made conservatism something to acceptably display on a college campus. That is such a powerful thing. I hate that TPUSA is being torn down in the result of his death. And I hate that, you know, it's our side that's doing it. Again, I cannot see the value of that. I can't see that as like a good thing that TPUSA is being destroyed. I think that's a horrible thing.
Well, I can say too, like, and I don't want to take this to like a dark and morbid and sad place, but I can just say, you know, Charlie and I knew each other, and there were times, you know, we were backstage together at events, and so, and I'd say, you know, we had a cordial relationship. Honestly, unfortunately, I think largely because of Candace Owens, there was friction between me and Charlie. There was tension, and I'm not one of those people who somebody dies and I'm like, oh my God, my best friend, you know, like that's the truth. You know, he and I were not close. And there was tension and there was friction and I think it was caused largely by her. But I still, to this day, even a moment ago when you were speaking, there are moments I want to burst into tears, like thinking about what happened to him and, the way it happened and I think it was one of the most traumatic things any of us will ever.
Well, that's probably part of it, isn't it? That's the ignition that set off this fire. And if it wasn't so emotional and visceral and horrifying and brutal.
And public.
I'm like choking up right now.
I know.
Because it is. So, I mean, clearly there's this emotional discordance that's underlying all of it.
Yeah. I will never forget. Do we have a moment that I can kind of, are we just talking?
Yeah.
It's like, it's one of those, you know, where were you when Charlie Kirk was shot?
Yeah.
I will never forget. You know, Walkaway has our first physical headquarters in New York City. It was very exciting for us. And it happened just last year. We've never had a physical headquarters. And, so I was at my headquarters in New York and, it's very much like a startup, you know what I mean? It's like a big room with just junky chairs and everything's junk. But we do have a nice TV in the middle of the room. And, so we were sitting there, we were doing some work and my phone rang and I think it rang several times with a friend of mine, Derek Evans, who like Derek is one of those people, it's very hard to get him on the phone. So if he's calling you several times in a row, something's up.
Yeah.
And, so I answered the phone and I've never heard him like this before. I could even get chills right now just thinking about it. He sounded out of breath and he sounded panicked. And he said, Brandon, dude, he said, Charlie's been shot. And he said, it looks really bad, man. I don't know if he's going to make it. And then he was kind of like, he's like, I'm worried about you. I'm worried. And it was just so many things at once. And the fact that he connected to, I'm worried about you. I was like, what are you talking about? You're worried about me. What does that mean? I didn't realize he was shot in the open in public at one of his events on colleges and, you know, and Walkaway, we do the colleges too. It's not like, you know, what he was doing, but, you know, we're out there with the tables and in a smaller crowd. And, so like, I'm just going to tell the truth here. My first instinct was like, okay, you're being dramatic, you know, calm down.
Right.
You're being dramatic because I honest to God thought like maybe he'd been shot in the arm or something. Like, you know, I thought it was just like, and then I went on social media and the first thing I saw, and it wasn't even just that I saw him being shot. It was that, you know, that angle that's like the worst angle. Mm-hmm. Like it's just right in the middle and it's very close. And it's like, I almost thought it was AI. Like I was just, it was so disturbing. And I knew instantly, I was like, there's no way he's alive.
Yeah.
No way he's alive. My parents, they've known about, you know, the tension between me and Turning Point and Charlie and Candace and all this stuff going back 8 years. And so I was on the phone with my parents when they officially said, you know, I knew, but like when they officially said he didn't make it. And my dad said, how are you doing? And I just burst into tears. And I just said, I feel so bad that we didn't ever get to sit across from each other and have a meeting of the minds. And, you know, whatever transpired between us, like I hate that he's leaving this planet and that's unresolved.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are clearly, I mean, it's the loss of his potential. That's the brutal thing. And then, you know, I was watching back and I played on the clip. I played the clip on the show a few weeks ago, but going back to the show immediately after that I did, And already then we had compilations of dozens of people celebrating it, mocking it, teachers, you know, with their faces on the camera singing songs about how much they loved it. And like, I was so convinced that we were about to round these people. I was almost excited, like, this is it. This sucks. This is horrible. But now we are going to do something against the left. The left has exposed themselves as sickeningly evil, and we cannot live like this, being murdered right out in the open. We are finally going to do something about the radical left in this country, and just nothing got done. Nothing got done. Those same people who were fired for celebrating the killing of Charlie Kirk have now gotten million-dollar payouts from the school districts for firing them. And it's like, so we got less than nothing. We have rewarded the people who are mocking Charlie. And I feel like, if nothing else, the distraction of the murder mystery sing-along that everybody's participating in for the last year, why did we not just focus on just go after the left? Whoever killed Charlie Kirk, it was the left that was celebrating. It's the left that's created this dangerous circumstance where people are being killed. The left, nothing has happened to them. They're more emboldened than ever. Socialists are winning elections. I feel like the Trump administration has squandered this second chance. They squandered this opportunity to make Charlie's death meaningfully impactful on the political stage. Do you understand what I mean?
Not only do I understand what you're saying, that was so beautifully said. I mean, so beautifully said, the way you just laid that out. I'll tell you this. I'm in this kind of rare and elite group of people who already saw that. Because I went through January 6th.
Right.
And and by the way, I'm not speaking on behalf of all J6ers, because there's a lot of J6ers who are still, they still think justice is coming. They still think, you know, that the right thing is going to happen. I have known almost since the beginning of this second administration that very little of what we were promised was going to happen because of the people that were put in charge, because I knew that whether Stan Bongino or Cash or Harmeet Dhillon or Pam Bondi or Todd Blanche or any number of other people, they didn't care about January 6th. None of them took an opportunity to learn anything about it here, including me. Like, I pretty well-known, pretty beloved figure in the, you would think, just out of a sense of obligation.
Well, and they name-checked you in particular when they said, we're going to do a shock and awe campaign. We're going to go after the influencers.
Right.
They mentioned you and went after you because of your public profile. That in and of itself is a reason to bring those people up on charges, I think.
And they left no stone unturned. I'm the only person who the DC court system accidentally unsealed all of my sealed documents for 27 minutes, and they accidentally ended up in a bulk email that went to NBC, Vice, MSNBC, etc. So everything that was supposed to be private about my case was leaked to the media, and like just
dirty tricks,
every dirty trick that you can possibly imagine. And
and they didn't care.
No, they didn't care. And so I've known for a while that these opportunities were going to be squandered, and that the justice that all of us thought was going to happen was not going to happen. And I also knew that for me, January 6th kind of was the thing. And again, I had a different perspective because I was actually going through it. But I thought that was the moment conservatives would rise up. I thought we would actually, okay, this is going to be the thing that gets them out in the streets marching and demonstrating and whatever, and nothing. And, you know, it's funny. I'll never forget when I became a conservative, you know, because I was a liberal 9 years ago or 8 years, whatever. I started kind of embracing everything and learning and changing my mind about so many things and stuff. And in those early years, we're talking about 2018, 2019 for me, I'll never forget a friend of mine who's always been a conservative and always been, you know, a Republican. We were talking about all the stuff the left does and they get away with it. No one does anything and whatever. And I remember him saying to me at the time, he was like, if the left ever actually really came for conservatives' guns, that would be the moment that, you know, the conservative, it would be. And he said, even conservative women, he said, you know, you'll see conservative women throw down and fight and whatever. And I was like, yeah. I don't believe that at all anymore. I think if the left came back into power and said, we're coming for your guns, I think conservatives would go, all right.
Oh, that's the most pressing thing I've ever heard.
I'm sorry, but that's, I now don't believe that there's any issue, whether it's Charlie Kirk's murder or January 6th or the 2020 election or COVID, or I've seen too much to believe that there's anything that would be so. We had a socialist running for mayor of New York City and nobody would help me. No one would help me. I was the only person in the entire country who led an effort to defeat Mom Donnie. The Republican Party wouldn't get, and I wasn't asking for money. I just said, will you show up? Will you help blast emails about the efforts and what we're doing? No one would get involved and help whatsoever. So I no longer believe that there is an issue that will cause conservatives to stand up and say, this is the thing now. We're finally going to let the left have it. And at least not in its current form.
Is that the leadership, or is that because the people, I think, are more extreme than the, you know, people that are online? I mean, I'm the conspiracy theorist extremist, and I come up and say some pretty crazy things. I talk to my normie friends, and they're like, you know, loading their guns. So, I mean, I think the people are like desperate to have a vengeful Republican go in and wreck shop. It's, to me, it's the establishment that just refuses to do it. They have no excuse not to. They always come up with one. So, I mean, do you think that's accurate, or you think the people themselves are sort of demoralized and won't do anything?
I think it's everybody. The establishment did not stop the people from standing up for J6ers. They didn't stop people from demanding that. Well, I mean, I guess there was a little bit of a counter for that. People were, I mean, I don't even know if, you know, the teachers and the stuff with Charlie Kirk, there was kind of an effort to sort of dox them, you know, and get Justin. I guess I see that. But I mean, in terms of like actual, like the left is intimidating. They're intimidating when, you know, I'm just a hypothetical example, but it's, you know, when some black kid robs a store and then the police come and the black kid jumps on the police officer's back and starts, you know, beating him in the head and the kid gets shot,
they're out on the street.
Millions of people on the left. And it's, you see these demonstrations and they're intimidated. It's like, whoa, look at them. Look at them go. We never have that for anything. We kind of had it after the 2020 election for a couple of months.
Well, and then they did January 6th.
And then they did January 6th.
That really did huge damage to conservatives' willingness to go out there. Man, I wish we had two more hours to talk. We barely got even into, you know, what the Republican Party needs to do now. We could go on for hours. Obviously, you have to go. You're a busy guy. But in the last minute here, if you had 1 minute, if you had an elevator pitch to Donald Trump and he says, Brandon, I'm going to do whatever you say. What do I do from this moment on? And you have 1 minute. What is your advice?
I would say, Mr. President, number one, please put all of the foreign issues aside. Concentrate on domestic issues in the American people. Concentrate on mass deportations. That in itself is going to solve so many of the problems that we have, whether it's housing, economy, affordability. Mass deportations is going to have a huge impact on all of that. Plus, it's going to make us all a lot safer, and it's going to give us a lot more trust in our elections and in our country once again. I would also say to him, Mr. President, we have an ever-closing window of time. It's closing very, very quickly. We must de-weaponize our Department of Justice. We must de-weaponize the FBI and the CIA and our three-letter institutions. This can happen. The number one thing that needs to happen is some of the greatest victims. How much do I still have? 10 seconds?
10 seconds.
Okay. Call in some of these people like myself and people who have been victims of weaponization. Let us give you our testimonies. Find out who the players were involved. Make sure they're fired, and where wherever possible, prosecute the people who did this.
Amen. Absolutely. Brandon Straka, follow him on X at Brandon Straka, the Walkaway Movement. Look for the debates coming out on YouTube and Rumble and possibly X in the future. But make sure you're following and subscribe so you can see them as soon as they come out. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
It's been great. Tell you, we go on for five more hours. We just don't have time. Who's got time?
That was fun.
Dirty, dark, dastardly villain is after the methylene blue formula.
Feast your eyes on the magical methylene blue. Don't wait. Get yours today while supplies last.
Abe, I think this is my favorite Alex Jones shirt.
Dude, I totally agree.
Founding fathers on patrol. Washington and Lincoln rocking the latest Alex Jones shirt. Marching past America's monuments. Liberty is awake. Visit thealexjonesstore.com now.
دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.